Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Welcome. Inner sight is simply seeing that which is always present, but not yet fully recognized. You have, within you, the ability to see yourself and the world around you in a new way with new eyes. So stay with us, and together we'll look at the world and ourselves with inner sight. Our topic for today, the United Nations and its future goals. Before we get started on this topic, I'd like to say a few words about Alice Bailey, the founder of the Lucis Trust organization. Alice Bailey wrote 24 volumes of literature, and those 24 volumes of literature are the main inspiration for the dialogue that you hear on this show. And the following thought is also from Alice Bailey. Speaking symbolically, when the United Nations has emerged into factual and actual power, the welfare of the world will then be assured. What is that welfare but love in action? What are right human relations but love among men, groups, and nations? What is international cooperation but love on a world scale? Those are the things which the love of God in Christ expressed, and those are the things which we are working toward today to bring into being. Do we see much evidence of love being expressed today on a global scale?
I think we do, although it might come as a kind of a novel idea that love on such a universal or international scale could be recognizable. The thought that you opened with, what is international cooperation but love on a world scale, might strike people as kind of surprising. But really, when you think about it, that is the expression of love, to cooperate for the good of the whole. And I think we are seeing that more and more. We all know that we can put our focus, our attention, on all that is wrong in the world, and there is plenty wrong. Or we can try to highlight and stimulate and strengthen what is good in the world. And an example that everybody is aware of, but it doesn't hurt to remind ourselves, was the response to the tsunami last Christmas, the day after Christmas, and the overwhelming outpouring of love and generosity and real sharing of resources and of concern and compassion that poured out to the people who were affected by that tsunami. That's a splendid example of love on a world scale, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I think this needs a new definition of love. Because we've tend to think of love only as the affectionate, fuzzy
Hollywood version.
Hollywood version of love.
Yeah.
Well, it is that in its lowest expression, but
maybe love, you could say, in its most personal expression.
Personal expression, lowest expression, too. But love on an international scale is, as you say, it's cooperation among nations, and that is, the challenge that we face in front of us now is to understand love on this international, more impersonal scale. It's bringing the intelligence of the intuition and the enlightenment of the mind to bear on bringing greater understanding, which is essentially what love is. It's a effort to understand the needs of the world and to fulfill those needs from the position of the whole.
People might be wondering why we are speaking about the United Nations at this time. This month is the 60th anniversary of the founding of the United Nations. And any time the odometer rolls over to a new cycle, I think that's a natural time for anyone to take stock. And with the United Nations turning 60, it is taking stock of its successes and of its failures and of its need for change, because to live is to change and grow and adapt and let go of certain characteristics that worked in the past, perhaps, but that don't apply to the present and the future. So this is a very opportune and appropriate time to be talking about the United Nations, which I really do believe was founded in love, because it was founded at the end of the World War. That was a time of enormous suffering for peoples throughout the world. I mean, was it 20 million people who died in Russia alone? Masses of people suffered and died through that war, which Alice Bailey views parts one and two as just one essential prolonged war. It went on for decades, and it was a time of chaos and transformation on a global scale. Out of that, the United Nations was formed because certain visionary people like Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Winston Churchill realized that there had to be some kind of global forum where the peoples of the world could come together to share ideas and plot strategy for a better way to live. And it might be also helpful to remind everybody that the United Nations is not just a collection of world governments, because the charter of the UN starts out, "We the peoples." Not "we the governments," but "we the peoples." The UN exists and serves and is established on the basis of the people of the world, not just the governments. And I think that's an essential misunderstanding.
Yes, that is. And it includes everybody. It's all humanity. Mm-hmm. And that's another aspect of love. And it's trying to understand, let's say, the love of God that includes the whole. And it's that love that was anchored and expressed by Christ 2,000 years ago, and is just now beginning to blossom in human consciousness. And this was an indication to the inner spiritual hierarchy that guides our inner government, that humanity was at a stage. We had reached a point in consciousness, in the development and awakening of our consciousness, where we could begin to grasp and cooperate and work together. And that was a key factor in the founding of the United Nations, because it showed the inner spiritual hierarchy that it was now possible to move forward in this direction.
And today, I think there are over 190 nations that are members of the United Nations. So obviously, the nations of the world want to join and be recognized as part of this global forum, even if they don't always live up to the principles of its charter, and that includes this country. Still, it would be hard to imagine a nation declining membership in the UN. Even Switzerland has reconsidered its position of disengagement with the UN. So it is recognized, at least on face value, as a major world forum. And I think this is an achievement in itself. You might say, well, it's just paying lip service to something. But I think that outer recognition does indicate a regard for the importance of the UN. What it needs now is a refreshment of and a renewal of the founding principles.
Right, and it's going through quite a struggle at this moment to live up to the goals that they've established. And Kofi Annan has the Secretary General of the UN has put forth proposals called the Millennium Proposals, and there are a number of policies that they want to bring forth by the year 2015 or the year 2020. And so it's a great challenge to the nations of the world to put this into play and to fulfill these challenges. And it remains to be seen whether we can or not. But nevertheless, it's a step forward to at least enunciate these policies and these goals, and to try to work towards them. Many nations are cooperating, but some are dragging their feet.
Maybe it would be good to review the Millennium Development Goals that have been the focus of the United Nations this month and next in setting the agenda for the coming UN session. The first one is to eradicate extreme poverty and hunger. Mm-hmm. One out of every two people in the world, I believe, lives on $2 a day or less. And something like 20%, one in five of the world's people, lives on a dollar a day or less. The disparity in income between the very rich and the very poor is increasing. It's not getting better, it's getting worse. And this is an urgent problem that absolutely must be addressed, because along with that increasing disparity come issues of alienation and deprivation that will only exact their consequences on all of us. We will all have to pay for this terrific injustice. The second one is to achieve universal primary education. And I believe that is progressing quite well at the present time. The third is to promote gender equality and to empower women. And the UN has been extremely active in a number of programs that bring greater opportunity for training and education and opportunity for women. And the fourth is to reduce child mortality, which is one of the basic standards of how successful a society is. Do its children survive to the age of, say, five? And interestingly, the United States is not at the top of the list by any means.
No, in fact, it's quite a ways down. Mm-hmm. About infant mortality. It's
it's kind of sad. Not a particularly good
record.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, not a very good record.
And yes, and also what the UN goals are is to reverse the spread of HIV/AIDS, which is a big scourge in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So all of those are, and there are others. What are some of the others?
Well, another one is to improve maternal health, which of course would be linked to reducing child mortality. The health of the mother, particularly while she's pregnant, affects the child to be born. And there is a lot of work that's been done by UNICEF, one of the major world UN agencies along that line.
And some of the other some of the other goals to be achieved are to ensure environmental sustainability. The environment, the world environment, is really a tremendous focus of attention right now, because the pollution is getting worse, and many countries are again dragging their feet about establishing policies. And even the United States has opted out of the Kyoto Agreement, and so there's an effort to get that back on track.
And that would be an example of a perfect issue for the UN to spearhead, because the environment and its problems can't be contained within the borders of any one nation. They spill over desertification, the problems of water and climate are issues that are beyond the borders of any one nation. And the United Nations, through the UNDP, the UN Development Program, and the UNEP, the UN Environment Program, have done a great deal of work to deepen our awareness of the problems in the environment and to come up with some solutions that then require the consent of the member nations, and that's often where the hang-up comes. If the member nations don't sign on to these programs that are proposed, nothing much gets done. The UN is not an enforcer. The UN, you could say, is an educator and a highlighter. And it presents information and offers a pooling of resources and ideas, but then the implementing of them often comes down to the member nations. And the last issue before the UN is to develop a global partnership for development, which I think is self-explanatory.
For those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today, the United Nations and its future goals. We have an interesting offer, a free offer from Lucis Trust, and I do hope you take advantage of it. It's a pamphlet on the United Nations Humanities Challenge. It's available at no charge for free once again, so please make sure you get your copy. I think it would be wonderful for those. It's interesting reading, but I think it's also wonderful for school teachers, wouldn't you say, Sarah?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it would be wonderful for them, and it is for free. You could probably make a lesson out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, it's the title of it is The United Nations Humanities Challenge. And it offers a review of current ideas for United Nations reform, as well as a depiction of the spiritual significance of the United Nations. So if you'd like your free copy, just give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. LUCIS is L-U-C-I-S. Think of 1-866-NY-LUCIS. We also appreciate the donations that you've given us in the past, and both donations of a large and small, they're greatly appreciated. They're certainly an expression to us of your support, and additionally, that's what keeps us on the air. So please continue to donate. If you would like to make a donation, then once again, they're tax deductible. Send your check or money order to Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. That's Lucis Trust, 120 Wall Street, New York, New York, 10005. Once again, the free offer from Lucis Trust is a pamphlet entitled The United Nations Humanities Challenge, available at no charge. And give us a call if you want that pamphlet at 1-866. That's the toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. The easy way to remember it, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. Think of 1-866. New York, Lucis. You know, nothing hits home more than a little anecdote or a statistic such as the one you gave before, that such a large percentage of the world is living on $2 a day. It brings to mind something that I saw on television once where it just woke me up. I was kind of in a lull, half watching the TV, until a man who was obviously poor came on, and he was in a third world country. And his only possession that he was so proud of was this wooden bowl that he had. And it just shocked me into watching the television, and as your statistic did before, about $2 a day, that's the, so many people in the world. How many people in the world are living on that, did you say?
Well, there's more than 6 billion people in the world, and if 50% are living on $2 a day or less, that's at least 3 billion.
Well, it makes you realize how blessed most of us are in this country.
And how encumbered by material possessions we are. I imagine the lifetime of such poverty might be a great experience in learning simplification, but it's carried beyond that point to real hardship and limitation. And still worse, the 20% who live on a dollar a day or less. The UN tracks the economies and the education and child mortality and maternal health of the nations of the world, and so many of them are concentrated in Africa. And it's heartrending to see the consequences of such terrific poverty, and to try to figure out a way to eradicate it is, I suppose, difficult, because it requires a change in consciousness. It's, I suppose, an example of inertia. things have always been that way. People have always been poor. The Bible says, the poor ye shall always have with you. And to overcome the poverty requires a real transformation in human consciousness and in human will to reach a point where we simply won't permit it.
Yes, and that's the important thing to remember about the UN, that it is perhaps the only organization in the world that can handle this the massive size of this problem, because it's more than just one country can deal with, especially the third world nations. They don't have the resources. So the UN provides a forum where all of the world's resources can be brought together and can be distributed at the appropriate place and the appropriate time and the appropriate amount. And this is the great spiritual meaning behind the UN. It provides a source of international distribution mm-hmm. of energy.
Yes, that's
and
a good
I
way
think
to put
that's
it.
One thing that the world is really lacking, and that's because it enables human consciousness to begin to think more universally, and that's the step according to the plan of God in which humanity should be moving towards a more universal understanding at a universal level of consciousness. And the UN is right there to help us in that expansion.
It isn't only poverty and human suffering that the UN focuses on. Another example of this distribution that you speak of is the world's postal delivery. I once went to a briefing at the United Nations that explained the work of the UN behind the scenes in the working out of various agreements that allow mail to transit from, say, South America to Asia. All of this happens because of agreements and practices that were worked out through the UN's auspices, that we get our mail and are able to send letters around the world. Another example is shipping and airlines travel that are coordinated by the offices of the UN. It's a global body. Another example is the overseeing of copyright law, which is such a hot item today with the pirating of material off the Internet. The world's intellectual property office in Geneva oversees the protection of intellectual property, which means creative works of all sorts. That's one of the major contributions of the UN. And another is the spread of disease, with travel being what it is today. If anybody remembers the outbreak of SARS a couple of years ago in Asia, it threatened the whole world. And the World Health Organization, an agency of the UN, brought it to a halt through its very effective and immediate action.
And I think one of the good things about this pamphlet, the United Nations Humanities Challenge, is that in the centerfold it has a graph of an outline of all the councils and the groups that make up the UN, the International Court of Justice, the Security Council, the General Assembly, the Economic and Social Council, the Trusteeship Council, and the Secretariat, and all the subcategories and organizations and specialized agencies that work under these major groupings. And it gives an outline of the whole UN structure, so that one gets a complete picture of the UN, the broad and vast spread that it has throughout the world.
And because it is so broad and so huge in scope, it's a very large bureaucracy. And I don't want our listeners to think that we are oblivious or unaware of the bureaucratic problems that the UN is facing. And Kofi Annan has been called on the carpet by the recent issuing of a report by Paul Volcker and his team that oversaw the problems of corruption. They weren't blamed on Kofi Annan himself, but on his office, which is the ultimate bearer of responsibility. The UN has a lot of work to do, but it is composed of so many different cultures and temperaments that I think it's probably miraculous there aren't bigger problems in bringing people from such different traditions and backgrounds together to focus on common projects and goals. The UN is only as successful as humanity wants it to be, in my opinion. It's a reflector of the state of human consciousness, not better than, not worse than, the best and the worst in humanity. But it's a global forum. You could say it's a place where the mind of humanity can work to envision solutions to world problems and to cooperate in the working out of God's plan for our world on Earth. And we should be more aware of the opportunity that the UN offers.
And that's the important thing. There is a connection there between the plan of God and the founding of the United Nations. It's a direct impression, if you want to say, from on high, from about the need for a world organization that could handle problems on a world scale. And like they used to say, if the UN hadn't been founded, well, then it would have to be founded now. And if it wasn't founded then, because we need the UN in the world, and it just isn't appreciated. Certainly it's not perfect, and it has a lot of problems to work out, but they are working at them, and there is no perfect government in the world that can really throw stones at the UN, because every government has its own problems likewise. So that's why the UN isn't perfect, because it's run by imperfect individuals.
Please take advantage of our special offer, the special offer from Lucis Trust. It's a pamphlet. It's for free. It's based on the topic that we were talking about today. And the title of the pamphlet, The United Nations Humanities Challenge. So just ask for the free pamphlet. You don't even have to pay for shipping and handling. Call up, ask for The United Nations Humanities Challenge, once again, available at no charge. It offers a review of current ideas for United Nations reform, as well as a depiction of the spiritual significance of the UN. I think it's wonderful for school teachers. A possible lesson could be based on it. It's also just a terrific reading for one to peruse it and get some truth about the United Nations. There's so much propaganda against it lately, but it's a force for good, and I think you'll realize that as you read the pamphlet. Give us a call at 1-866-695-8247. You've been listening to Inner Sight. Now we would like to close with a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.